19th chapter of Genesis. And verse 12. In just a moment. We'll begin a series of meditations for parents in this morning hour. One thing that many of you may know that I'll insert here is an announcement, because Ann Burton will be continually asked when she's going to leave, and the answer to that is she's not leaving, because her son-in-law and her daughter are moving back and going to be here again, and so we're going to have Ann, and we thank God for that. This brief verse, taken out of the life of Lot. Lot was the nephew of Abraham, his brother Haran's son. Haran had died in Ur of the Chaldees, the land of their nativity. And so Lot had gone with his uncle. He is living in the city of Sodom. Angels of God have visited him there to tell him that the city was dedicated to destruction by God. And they give him this urgent counsel. And the men said to Lot, "Have you here any besides son-in-law and your sons and your daughters? And whomsoever you have in the city, bring them out of the place." I'm a bit amazed at the philosophy of parenting that has grown up in this generation, as I'm amazed about the philosophy of marriage that has grown up. If there is a prevalent philosophy of marriage among young people in this country, it is this: just do what comes naturally. We reduce ourselves to animals who operate by instinctual urges. And somehow we trust that when the moment arrives that we need to meet our responsibilities in certain areas, that these impulses will just take over and we will do what we need to do. We have children bearing children in this country. 1/4 of the births in the United States are illegitimate. And among some segments of the society, the percentage is 60+%. But if you think we are liberated, go to Sweden, where the rate of illegitimacy is 50%. Someone says, "Oh, that's a small matter. Just an issue of legalities." I wish that's all it were. That would not be good, but I wish that's all there was to it. But the truth of the matter is that it reveals and reflects a spirit of irresponsibility and heedlessness that is inexcusable about this matter of having children. Because we believe about parenting, just as we believe about marriage, that you just do what comes naturally. Just like the cattle and the dogs. They just instinctually respond to their responsibility. They know what to do for their offspring. Well, if we know anything at all, we know that's not true. If there's a guaranteed formula for failure in marriage and failure in parenting, it's doing what comes naturally. We have no natural instincts to parent. Although skills must be taught. And if they must be taught, they must be learned. We can go to sleep mentally, spiritually, and in every other way as we're leading our children, because they seem to be doing so well, these little infants, taking their nourishment, prospering physically, looking ruddy and strong, And they are so sweet and adorable and cute in so many ways that we can become very confident as this process begins that everything is going fine. Everything is well. Happy days. That's blindness. And at last, it's stupidity. Because we, every last one of us, have been exposed to enough of life to know that that is not true. What Solomon says, 29th chapter of Proverbs and verse 15, that a child left to himself will bring shame to his mother, is as true as it's ever been. Children must be nurtured. Children must be nurtured. There was a French philosopher by the name of Rousseau in the 19th century who decided that children had within themselves a natural goodness and wisdom. That all you needed to do was let them loose, free them from the constraints of the adult world, and let them develop into the kind of individuals that were intrinsic within them. The idea of the noble savage went along this same corridor of thought, that the most noble people in the world were the most primitive. And so education following the Rousseauian model was to let the child alone. Let him develop as he chose. John Dewey picked up much of the same philosophy, brought into the American educational system, and out of the American educational system, it spread until it's involved us in a parental philosophy that says that what we need to do with our children is let them alone. Let them grow and develop according to their natural instincts. Again, let me say, that is a formula for disaster. It's comforting and comfortable. It means I don't have any responsibility here except stay out of the way. And if I can stay out of the way, that means I can do what I want to do and let the children do what they want to do. And then we will all have fulfilled our desires. And this has really come to fruit in a generation that has been so filled with the desire to find themselves. And they're going to be parents because that's the way things are, but these parents are so busy finding themselves and thinking that the children are perfectly capable of finding themselves that it's a laissez-faire kind of parenting that involves no direction and no nurture and no responsibility. And, of course, there's no pain in it at the beginning. But I remind you of the words of the 127th Psalm. Except the Lord build the house, they labor in vain that build it. Except the Lord keep the city, the watchman waits, but in vain. It is vain for you to rise up early, to take rest late, to eat the bread of toil, for so he gives to his beloved sleep. Lo, children are a heritage of the Lord, and the fruit of the womb is his reward. As arrows in the hand of a mighty man, so are the children of youth. Happy is the man that hath his quiver full of them. Sometimes we ask the question, where do children come from? There's a classic illustration of the failure of scientific studies in the case of a certain country where they learned that there was a correspondence between the increase in the stork population and the birth rate. Now, you could draw some conclusions from that. Where do children come from? Well, we say that's a biological process. I know that. But that doesn't answer the ultimate question. The psalmist answers the question, where do children come from? Children come from the Lord. To every parent and prospective parent in this assembly this morning, I say to you that if you ever have a child, if you now have children, each child, all those children, are gifts of the Lord. And with that gift comes responsibility. Children can't rear children. Children chronologically cannot do it, and people who in mind are still children, who do not have a sense of responsibility. It's an awesome responsibility. If you understand, as every child of God does understand, that each child that comes into the world begins a journey that has no ending. There is within the bosom of every little baby an eternal spirit. This is a personality formed in the image of God. And although it is a gift from God, it's not a gift of the ultimate sort. That is, our children do not belong to us. Our children are a stewardship. Our children are lent to us in order that we can give them back again. That's the purpose. You know, one of the failures of parenting is a common failure of all enterprise, and that is there's no dream, no vision, no purpose. We've got parents in this country who have no idea what their children are supposed to be, have no idea of what they want them to be. Go out parenting day to day, ad hoc, you know, whatever comes up, I deal with it as that happens. But I have no plan. I have no dream. And if there's anything sadder than no dream at all, it's some sort of corrupt, selfish, mindless plan that has no depth to it. It doesn't recognize the value of the child. It doesn't realize that what we're dealing with here is a case of someone who's going to spend eternity either in heaven or hell. And what God wants is for that child to be given back to Him, to spend eternity with Him. That's the purpose of the Lord. Is that our purpose as parents? I don't know what Lot was thinking about when he took his family and moved them down to the rich bottom land, as old Brother Ficklin used to say, around Sodom and Gomorrah. When he was given his choice of the land by his uncle, take whatever part you want. We are brethren. We don't want to have a dispute. And Lot said, I'll just move down toward the big city. What was his dream for his children? There are many of us that have very tawdry dreams, I'm telling you. First of all, the big problem is our dreams for ourselves are tawdry. We're dreaming about being somebody. Being wealthy. Being important in the society. And of course, if you're important in this society, you've got to be like this society, which is enough to chill your bones. And so we strive ourselves for that kind of dream, and we hold the same sort of dream out to our children. And if we fail in our dreams, we try to force them on our children so that they can be rich like we were not rich, or they can be big sports figures as we failed to be because we just didn't quite have the ability. Or they can be somebody important in the world as we tried and failed to be. And so they become instruments of our own vanity, which is about as heartless and selfish a thing as I can imagine. Well, what are your dreams for your children? What I hear from some Christians are things like, well, I'd like them to really get a good education. I'd like for them to get a fine education. And we'd like for them to do some really meaningful work in the world so that we can be proud of them. Of course we want them to be Christians. Of course that. You know, that's just thrown in as a given. But I guarantee, from what I sometimes observe in the lives of parents and their value system, I don't believe they're serious. I think they've just said that to make themselves feel good. Because there's no indication whatsoever, first of all, that the parent has put heaven as the most important priority in his or her life. No evidence of that. And we will not teach our children what we do not believe. We will not do that. You know what the 127th Psalm says, that children are like arrows in the quiver of a mighty man. If I may press this metaphor a little further, probably than the author intended, we are responsible for the direction those arrows take. We put them in the bow and we send them out in a certain direction. I recognize we're dealing with a child that has a freedom of will like our own. But I'm saying to you that we have the privilege and we have the responsibility of directing those children to the right dream. And if we're going to direct them to it, we're going to have it. We need to be like Hannah. She was a good woman. First chapter, 1 Samuel. Wanted a son so desperately. Knew where children came from. Asked the Lord to give her a child. And she said, if you will do so, I will give him to you all his days. Of course, she also said there would be no razor come upon his head. Because he was going to be a lifetime Nazarite. That was a child committed in a special way to God. But I want to say that what Hannah aspired to with the son she was yet to receive, we ought all to aspire. I was privileged recently to officiate at the marriage of our son. When you've got a son 30 years old and he finally gets married, that's wonderful. But of course his father was 29. But I remember one of the vivid images of my married life is of seeing that little ruddy baby in the arms of the nurse the night he was born. I'm not sure that I understood fully then what it was all about. It was a wonderful time. Because to have a child is a wonderful thing. But I didn't have any idea what the days ahead might bring. Disappointments, difficult times. But increasingly I realized that my task was not to possess this young boy and to use him for my own personal advantages. To see him as someone who needed to fit into my program, make life pleasant for me. But I saw him increasingly, as I did my other children, as a responsibility that I owed to God. Because in the final analysis, as I was to tell my son one time when he was about 16 or 17, you don't belong to me. I don't view it that way. I don't see you as my property so that I can order you around any way I please. I'm going to have to give account to God for the way I have handled, treated, and nurtured you. And it's my dream and my aspiration that you should be given back to him. I don't have absolute control of that, but everything I do is with that in mind. Not so I can make it difficult for you. So we have to dream a dream. But that dream's got to get inside our own hearts if we're going to have it for our children. We need passionately to desire. That our children should serve God from the fullness of the joy of their heart in him. That day when that occurs is a joyful day when our children, without our urging and because they choose it for themselves, say, Jesus Christ is Lord. And then, of course, if it occurs when they are young, we'll be concerned that they continue to grow in that direction, to nurture them in that direction. Does your home life reflect this central, overwhelming, profound concern in you so that your children will understand that that's the direction you want to send them back to God? Lot got his children in a bad place. And I don't know whether we're fair in saying that he did it because he was too much interested in rich bottom land. The scripture says that he was a righteous man. and that the unholiness of the city of Sodom vexed his soul. But what is safe to say is that this righteous man made some decisions that cost him dearly. And I'm concerned about some parents today who are so interested in their own professional achievements, who are so concerned for their jobs and for their standing in the community economically, the kind of houses that they live in, the kind of automobiles they drive. Their children are never going to have any idea that the most important thing in life is serving God. That happiness is there. Greatness is there. Fullness of joy is there. Not only here, but hereafter. I don't know how they're going to get that idea. When fathers move their families all over creation just to satisfy ambition in the job, rather than being concerned about how these moves are going to affect the family, the children. And I'm not just talking about physical moves. I'm talking about moves we make within the same geographical area, decisions we make about our jobs, time we're going to spend with them, how much they're going to mean, how big a bite of our lives they're going to take out. Those are decisions that affect our children. You say, well, but a man must work. We know men must work, but this lame excuse that I have to have this job to put food in the mouths of my children. Your children would have plenty to eat. In many instances, when you choose to take employment that demands so much of you that you have nothing left to guide your family. Now, I want to tell you something, man. That is a sin. Get out of Sodom, the angel said. Get these that you love out of here. Don't you understand that's what your task is? This place is on fire. This world is on fire. And our task is to escape its hellish ways and deliver every one of our children we can out of it. There is nothing more heart-rending than to listen to a parent who loves the Lord, whose heart is broken because a child is far away from Christ, and to feel the earnest agony of their souls. They're happy in Christ, but there's somebody they love that's still living in Sodom. You don't want to guide your family in such a way and make decisions in your family in such a way that your children are going to get caught up in Sodom. Lot lost a lot. Haven't thought about the double use of the term, but he lost greatly. Lost his wife. And lost his daughters, prospective husbands. Either he had some married daughters who were lost to, along with their husbands, or there were two daughters of his that were espoused. And the prospective sons-in-law did not want to leave. And then there's the sad story of what happened after all the collapse of the cities of the plain and what his daughters did in getting him drunk, sleeping with him to bear sons that became the fathers of nations that were an abomination to God for the most part the years thereafter. Lot was spared, but he lost a lot in the process because he did not dream the right kind of dream at certain points and take thought for his family. I want to talk to mothers too. You know, you read the 31st chapter of Proverbs. It's interesting to me how in this generation of working mothers, some people get hold of this and they say, look at this woman. She's industrious. She's in business. She's buying land. She's doing many things. And I wouldn't deny that. It's in there. In fact, if you read what this woman did. It'll make you tired just reading about it.
You talk about a buzz of activity.
Verse 13 says, she seeks wool and flax, works willingly with her hands. She's like the merchant ship. She brings her bread from afar. She rises also while it is yet night, gives food to her household and their task to her maidens. She considers a field and buys it with the fruit of her hands. She plants a vineyard. She girds her loins with strength and makes strong her arms. She perceives that her merchandise is profitable. Her lamp goes not out by night, up before daybreak. Doesn't go to sleep to well in the night. Industrious always. But I want you to notice one thing. Before you begin to suppose that what we've got here is a perfect example of our modern working wife who's got her professional aspirations and she's got her children too. Everything this woman did was for whom? Everything this woman did was for whom? For her household and for her husband and for her children. This is no working model of some aspirant businesswoman who's got her aims in this society to make her mark and who also has got children. Whatever this mother is doing, whatever this wife is doing, she's doing to bring honor to her husband and to bring blessing to her children. She serves her household. This is a homemaker. This is a home builder. And that's the indictment that I think can be brought against many a working mother. It's not so much that mothers are working today, it's the reason they're working. It's not to serve the family in the ultimate sense. In too many instances, it's to serve our economic aspirations, what we'd like to have. After all, others have it, and we ought to have it too. Others have a lot of things. And maybe they can have it and we can't have it. Had you ever thought about that? Maybe some people in their circumstance can have those things and still rear their children like they ought, but we cannot do it. And we have to see that crisis and recognize what we have to choose and say, I choose to serve my family and I choose to serve them for their eternal good. I don't like the thought of a generation of children in this country raised in nursery schools by strangers. I want to conclude my remarks today by talking about the way parents get intimidated by their children. Intimidated by the task. Almost frightened out of their wits. Distressed and distracted and unable to deal with the problems that their children present, and those problems continue to grow in perplexity as the children get older and they get more and more distracted, more and more confused, and more dismayed, and more intimidated by it. And I want to tell you there's no reason for that if you do what's right. First of all, God's on your side. He's given them to you. And He's able to instruct and guide you in the right ways to bring them up in the nurture and admonition of the Lord, as the Apostle Paul said in Ephesians. But why should we be intimidated by the society around us? I know it's wicked and ungodly. It was wicked and ungodly in Ur of the Chaldees. And it was wicked and ungodly in the days of Noah. And all through the history of the Old Testament people, mothers and fathers brought up children. Moses was brought up by Amram and Jochebed in a horrible sort of situation down in Egypt. And they did it. And the reason they did it was because they loved God. And that was the passion of their lives. And they communicated that to their children. They worked with those children and nurtured those children in that very direction. They took them as arrows and they shot them right directly at heaven. That's what they did. Serious about it. And you need to recognize that God is your helper in this great enterprise. First of all, because you've got all the advantages. You get those children when they're first born. You make the first impressions on them. It's your smile that they come to know, and your laughter that they come to know, and the tone of your voice that they come to know, and your words, and your ideas, and your concepts of life that they come to know very early in the most impressionable part of their lives. Unless, of course, you just hatch them and turn them over to somebody else. Then you lose that. You lose that. This idea that somehow or another we make the necessary economic arrangements, the necessary provisions for this child, so that he's got enough to eat and some direction and some adult care and direction, that's preposterous. As if that's all there was to it. You have the advantage with the child because you have him early and you have him intimately. And then throughout the lifetime, that original relationship, that bonding that takes place between children and parents, continues to have tremendous influence if it's exercised properly and rightly. But if we turn them loose, give them over to the care of strangers so that we can be free to pursue our other goals, I tell you, I wouldn't want to stand and face God in judgment for that. This is not money we're dealing with here. This is not property we're dealing with here. We're dealing with eternal souls. We're dealing with children. Don't be intimidated. I see a lot of intimidated parents. They don't know what to do with their children. Children just absolutely baffle me. Well, you just need to remember that you're smarter than they are. That's right. Oh, he said, no, we're not smart men. They come home with all that computer business and come home talking about these mathematical... I don't understand. What's that got to do with anything? Been many a stupid fool knew all everything was to know about computers. We're talking about the wisdom to live. Not to function in some mechanical fashion. Don't be intimidated by that. Be glad your children have learned it. But don't think they've learned anything vitally important because they've learned that. Unless you are just so persuaded that what life's about is knowing about computers. What life's about is knowing who you are, who God is, what life is supposed to be. What life's about is character and nobility of spirit. And honesty and integrity and humility. And I guarantee you, you can teach your children those things because you've had the privilege of learning it, some of it, in the University of Adversity. And it's your task and responsibility to teach them that. Somebody said, but they don't like it. I know they don't like it. How did you suppose they would respond? Children will push off against you. And you have to be the teacher. You can't turn the classroom over to the students. I'm sorry, but that's the way it is. God has given you this relationship. You're older than they are. You're more experienced than they are. You have understandings of the world and of its tragic pitfalls. And you have understanding where the happiness and good things are. And you've got to teach these children. They don't know. You say, but they think they know. I know they think they know. You thought you knew when you were that old too. But you didn't know, and you know that now. And you're going to have the responsibility and the perseverance and the trust in God to go ahead and lead your children the right way. But as you lead them, I want you to remember that this is a positive, not a negative goal. There are some parents who think that parenting is all. Don't do that. Stop doing it. You can't do that and continually all day long. It's one long negative tirade. You watch yourself. It'd be a good idea for you just to tape record everything you say to your children at day's time and see how much negative reaction, how much negative information you're feeding them. Because you're trying to nurture them into something positive, you know. And every time they do good, you ought to say, it was good. They ought to hear it from you. And every time they don't get it right, they need to hear from you. You didn't get it right. You're not a bad boy, you're not a bad girl, but you did a bad thing. Now, I'd counsel you, don't ever attack the person. Don't ever say it to a child, you just no account. No, what you need to say is what you did. That was no account. But you're better than that. You can do better than that. I believe that you have a capacity for something finer. And I want it to come out of you. And we may have our hard days and our difficult times, and we may have our misunderstandings, but there's one thing you're going to know as long as we are together, that I love you. And that what I'm doing on your behalf is not done for any selfish purpose of mine. And if you're not able to understand that now, you're going to understand it hereafter, because I'm going to do my dead level best to teach you the way of the Lord and to send you off on your way to serve. That's my dream for you. You cannot be your children's peer. You cannot be your children's contemporary. You are not your child's contemporary. You have to be the parent. You have to be the teacher. You have to be the nurturer. You have to be the leader. You have to be the model. You have to be the example. That's our responsibility, as it was our parents before us. And by the help of God, we can do it. But we've got to get this dream of eternal life deep within ourselves, love of God deep within ourselves, wisdom of God deep within ourselves. Parents, read the book of Proverbs. It gives you all kinds of ideas about what you need to be teaching your children. To keep your heart with all diligence, proud of it, the issues of life. Trust in the Lord with all thy strength. Lean not upon thine understanding. Avoid the foolish woman. Don't be a clamorous individual. All kinds of wise counsel within the page of the Scripture, and of course all of it's wrapped up and exemplified and personified and embodied in the very body of Jesus Christ. And we follow Him and seek to do what He's taught us to do. I didn't intend this to be an intimidating lesson. I taught you not to be intimidated by your children. And I've said to you, don't be negative with them, and I don't want to be negative with you, because you can do it. That's what I'm leaving you with. You can do this job that God has given you to do. He'll equip you to accomplish it. And I know you're going to have some days when you'll wonder. But don't you wonder. You know if you're training your child in the ways of the Lord, that's right. And if any good's going to come out of this, that's the way it's going to come out. But I've got to give myself to the task. I can't have my vain ambitions and then I'm going to have my children too. I get amused at this idea. Parents today, we're going to have both. No, you can't be servant of two masters. You're going to have to decide which is most important here. Going to heaven or making some sort of provision in this very temporary life. And the Lord bless you. As you seek to be parents, I know you think I'm through, but I'm not through. I'm still worrying about it. Still worrying about it. As soon as the grandchildren come, I'll be worrying about them. That's the way it is. That's what a parent is. I'm thankful for the privilege. But he does have his responsibilities, and God will enable us to fulfill them. If you're not a Christian, if you've not committed yourself to eternity, if you haven't taken that infinite kind of perspective and said, my life is not just for this earth. My life transcends this time. And I'm a servant of the living God. Then you're ill prepared to serve your children because you can't direct them in the way that you yourself are not taking. I say that kindly, but I think you know that is true. In this area and in all others. And I urge you to do it. Not just for your children, though it would be a blessing for them. But for yourself. And to those who are Christians, parents who've been distracted by matters that are far from transcendent, far from critically important, I urge you to come back again and remember who you are and what a blessing you receive to have these children and what a blessing you can be to them if you try. I don't know that anything I've said requires you to come before this assembly. They just require you to come before God if you're a Christian and tell Him you're sorry. That you haven't been doing well, but that's the end of that matter. You're going to do right. And ask His help. If you're not a Christian, of course, you need to come and confess the Lord now. Openly say that Jesus Christ is Lord, and we'll help you be baptized into the Son of God this very moment. And you're not only going to be equipped for big parents, you're going to be equipped for everything before He gets through. And it'll be wonderful. And you'll never have a regret. While we're standing and saying.